Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we zero in on something called citizen-based monitoring, or CBM, they like to talk about it. They like to use that acronym. And as it relates to our endangered species here in the state of Wisconsin, we're going to be doing something every month on to sort of observe our endangered species. And this month is no exception. We have a couple of guests who actually are very much involved in CBM, or citizen-based monitoring. Owen Boyle is coordinator of CBM for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Owen, great to have you with us. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Larry.
And Chris Stebanuk is the Water Action Volunteer Coordinator for UW Extension and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. So you've got sort of two masters here, but with one goal in mind, I think.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And let's just to begin with, Owen, maybe you can talk about what is citizen-based monitoring.
Sure, Larry. Well, citizen-based monitoring is essentially anytime volunteers are participating in surveying or monitoring any of our natural resources. Now, that could be anything from wildlife to plants to water to weather.
And so the citizens are out there in a program? Is it a design? Are they design programs?
You know, there's a wide variety of programs. Some, there's really no interaction with the program coordinators. There are things like eBird, where basically you just go out and do your regular bird watching, and then you can go online and register on the eBird.org and enter your bird sightings. And that's a very large program, works across the entire nation, actually across the entire world. But there are many programs, too, that are very specific and have very specific protocols that you know, people can get trained up on and go out and collect data on wildlife and plants and water.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, we have the Wisconsin Citizen-Based Monitoring Network, right?
Yes.
And what's it? And it's that's its role?
Well, it's a loose affiliation of over 150 different organizations and programs that exist in the state. And back in 2004 or 5, we did a survey to try to figure out who's out there and who's doing what. And so the network is organized by DNR and kind of oversees and kind of helps people find the right program. If they're interested in bat monitoring, directs to that program. If they're interested in butterfly monitoring, can connect people with that or whatever people
whatever it
in.
Is. And there's a whole pile of ways you get different things you can get involved with, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
We have I know frogs and toads, I know ponds, I know cranes, there are a lot of them there. I didn't give the number. I'm going to do that right now. If you would like to join in, maybe you're involved in some citizen-based monitoring, love to hear from you about your experiences with it. Maybe you have some questions about how to do it, or maybe you have questions about a particular species, be it plant or animal, and where you might get involved. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post your questions or your comments there. Let's talk about, Chris, the citizen-based water monitoring network. What goes on there?
So there's several different programs that are involved with water monitoring. There's a lakes program, the Citizen Lake Monitoring Network. There's a streams program called the Water Action Volunteers. And there is an invasive species, a couple different programs. There's the Clean Boats, Clean Waters program, and also what's called Project Red. Both of them are involved with getting people out on the water or at boat landings to talk to folks about invasive species or look for invasive species. The Lakes program has people monitoring water clarity as well as water chemistries. And the Streams program crosses through similar things, looking at water clarity, looking at aquatic insects, things like chloride. We're doing a road salt monitoring project right now where people are out all winter every other week or more when there's road salting going on, looking to see the effects of road salting on our waters.
I'm wondering the tools for this. I mean, the citizens, most of us, if it was me, for example, I mean, I had chemistry back in college long, long time ago, but I really don't. I would have no idea as to how to go about this. Are there some? What kinds of education programs, I guess, do you have?
So every volunteer monitoring program, whether it be for bats, birds, water, whatever, we all offer training. For the most part, there's either in-person training, hands-on, get your feet wet with our programs, or online trainings are sometimes the way to go. So people don't have to have a background in science. If it's an interest, something that sparks your interest, you can come out to a training. With the waters programs, we will have Saturday trainings in April and May, or evening or weekend trainings at other times of the year, and get people out there in the streams, on the lake, learning how to do the methods to do the monitoring.
And Owen, where would this take place? The education, what parts of the state? Any?
Well, I mean, really, you name it. Citizen monitoring happens everywhere in the state of Wisconsin, and as Chris alluded to, it really depends on the program itself, where you know, where the training would go on. Many of these programs are run out of nature centers, sometimes high schools or even grade schools. In a lot of cases, the best first step for people to get involved is to find their local nature center.
Oh. Gary in Racine has a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Well, I was listening to you on the radio, and we do the bat monitoring with Dave Riddell out of the Madison office. And we've been doing it for a couple of years with the Racine County Conservation League. You know, it's a great program. You know, right now we have white nose syndrome that is hitting a lot of bat populations out east and moving this way. So we're trying to figure out why it's happening and stop it before it gets into Wisconsin. It's a great exercise. I mean, you have to go out and do this for, you walk for at least 1 hour each night in certain areas. You know, your organization does have to buy the equipment. We bought it back about 5 years ago, and it was roughly about $3,000 then, but well worth it. You know, different members can check it out. So if they're going camping or something, they check the equipment out, and we are able to check a lot of different areas for the DNR that way.
Hmm. And what kind of equipment is it that you...
Well, the equipment, what it is, it's a sonar box, which picks up their actual sonar that each bat throws out, and it has a GPS on it, which gives the exact location that you are walking, and it also picks up, in that sonar, it will tell you exactly which bat is up there, which in Wisconsin we have six different species.
Right.
So it'll pick up what species you're picking up. You know, there's certain species that are very rare in Wisconsin, and so they like to keep track of, what's happening with those. Mm-hmm. And also other species that are flying through to Canada or Michigan.
And you mentioned, Gary, that you're a group or organization, perhaps. Is this something that you formed, or you folks formed on your own, or the DNR helped you form? Or?
Well, I heard about the program, and I went to a lecture on it. My wife and I did, and I went back to my organization and pushed real hard to go ahead and spend this money, because it was a good chunk of money, because I thought that it was a worthwhile cause. I mean, if we lose our bat population, we are in big trouble. They eat approximately 600 mosquitoes a night, not to mention other bugs in the farm fields, which if we lose the bats, then the farmers are going to have to use more pesticides.
Yeah.
We also have bats that propagate fruit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a species that, you know, a lot of people don't even want to think about, but it's something that we definitely need. And right now, it's being out east. It is being totally wiped out.
Well, Gary, thank you very much for coming. It sounds to me like you have enjoyed your time, and it certainly sounds like you're doing significant work.
Oh, it's fun, and it's a great exercise, and any other group that's looking for a project to do, I strongly recommend it.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. I want a comment from you.
Yeah, Gary, thanks a lot for your volunteer work, and you're absolutely right. We are very concerned about our bats, and but you're also right that bat monitoring is a lot of fun. And, you know, I just wanted to mention quickly, though, that you don't need to necessarily buy one of those acoustic bat detectors. We've got quite a few throughout this state at this point and at nature centers and universities, and you can often borrow them. We've got some pretty active borrowing programs simply because they are so expensive. Yeah. But, you know, getting out there at night just after dusk and walking around, you can even actually do water routes. My wife and I had done bat surveys on the Sheboygan River in a canoe in the dark. And boy, I tell you, that's a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
Yep.
Oh, that sounds great. Gary, thank you again. Appreciate your call. Have you done that, Chris?
The bat monitoring, not yet. But I have to say, Gary exemplifies a lot of the volunteers where he said, you know, he heard about it at a meeting or whatnot and then got in touch with the coordinator. And I think that's how a lot of our volunteers get involved, where they have a local group or they hear something or they see it in Facebook or in the paper. And next thing we know, we have some dedicated folks out there doing whatever kind of monitoring that it is that sparks their interest.
Oh, that's just wonderful. You can join in too, by the way, with your own questions or comments or your own experiences. That was a great experience. I'd love to hear some others as well. Or just give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. And I assume, well, the DNR obviously supports this monitoring program in part through having you folks working on it.
Most definitely.
That's right. In addition to Chris and I, we've got a small assistance program where we can give out small amounts of money for groups that want to start up new monitoring programs. That's one of the ways many of the nature centers and others have purchased, for example, these acoustic bat detectors. And we also provide support for, you know, any groups who are starting up in terms of recommendations for volunteer recruitment, retention, and also specific protocols for ways to monitor and collect data about different types of species, anything from freshwater sponges to black bears.
Yeah. And the data itself, how are the data organized and how are the data used? Be ashamed to be collecting all this and then never find a use for it.
That's a great point, Larry. And, you know, that's one of my jobs is to do exactly that, is to figure out a way to really make use of this data. Because obviously, you know, people are interested in natural resources. They care enough to spend their valuable time getting out there and volunteering. And the whole point from our perspective is that we can do more together than we can just on our own as the DNR. And so, you know, making sure those data are used and useful for management is one of my primary goals.
We're talking today about the citizen-based monitoring program that we have here in the in Wisconsin and to some extent across the nation as well. Our two guests, Owen Boyle, who is coordinator of citizen-based monitoring for the Wisconsin DNR, and Chris Stepanuk, who is the Water Action Volunteer Coordinator for UW Extension and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Questions or comments, join in at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of great monitoring projects out there for you to get involved in. Maybe you're interested in frogs or toads or owls or cranes or bats or ponds. Those are some of the things that you can get involved in monitoring here in Wisconsin. And love to hear from you with your own comments, your own questions, or if you've been involved in monitoring, I hope you'll call in as well at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. We had an email from Tim in New Berlin. What do you folks think of the effects of our citizenry having such a wide range of observation and identification abilities? I participate in eBird often and wonder whether the people entering data really know what they're looking at. Wisconsin has a great eBird team, but many states do not, so incorrect identifications might slip through. I try to make conservative identifications when involving possible rarities or birds present outside of normal date ranges. But I'm concerned that many people aren't quite so conservative. An interesting point.
Yeah, it is a good point. And, you know, of course, we are concerned about data quality. And every good citizen-based monitoring program has some sort of, you know, quality control system set up. He mentions eBird, and as he also mentioned, eBird does have a very good quality control system built in. We probably don't need to go into the details, but there are regional editors, people who, when sightings are flagged as sort of out of season, or, you know, if you report a golden wing warbler in your backyard in the middle of winter, that's going to send up a flag because that's a species that spends its winter in South America. So, you know, those get flagged, and the regional editors follow up. That's just one example. Again, all programs have some kind of QAQC process.
Interesting. Chris, did you want to add something there? It looked like you were...
Sure. Yeah, I was just going to say, within the Waters program, we have people entering their data to online databases, and the databases are set up with checks where we say, okay, we expect to see within this range, and if it's outside of that range, then we can follow up with the volunteer and say, you know, what happened, or we can follow up with a local biologist to go out. If there is something outside the range, there could be a problem, and that's when we really want to get somebody else out there to follow up and prove or test again see what's going on.
Did you ever have one of those experiences yet where you...
We have had some where we've had extremely low dissolved oxygen levels, and that can be a major issue. Fish kills can happen in the streams and whatnot, and in that case, we call the biologist and say, hey, this is what we found, this is what the volunteers found, this is the location, can you follow up? We've had some instances where we found out that is a common occurrence. Sometimes it's due to a stream being... coming from a wetland, and the wetlands have low oxygen conditions, so it's a natural occurrence. Other times we've had it where the volunteers, an example I can think of was back probably about 10 years ago, where the volunteers were the first to find a fish kill. They went out to do their monitoring, and there was a fish kill, so they were able to...
They were right there.
Yeah. ...say something and get the authorities out to figure out what was going on.
Interesting. Bob in Coon Valley, it's your turn. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Morning. I have a question on the monitoring of the level of Lake Michigan. Even though the other Great Lakes seem to be at somewhat record highs, it seems like we keep losing more and more water out of Lake Michigan. What is going on with the monitoring of that?
You know, I'm not sure if there is volunteer monitoring of the level of the lake.
Right. As far as I know... The Great Lakes water level depths are monitored by federal programs. Yeah, not so much citizen programs.
It is the lake level is down considerably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although I can remember even when I was doing this program at one time talking about the lake level on Lake Michigan being so high that it was flooding. I mean, that was probably 20 years or more ago. But
yep.
So it does go up and it goes and go down, but it's pretty much been fairly steady low for many
recent years.
For many recent years. Yep. Tell you what, Bob, if we find something out here, we'll talk about it on the air, and perhaps somebody's listening at me want to call in and help us out on that. Be a good topic to have just to talk about for a show sometime. Judith's shaking her head, yes. Yeah, we'll follow up. Jeff in Janesville, it's your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I do a lot of fishing north of Eagle River, and it's not uncommon at many of the lakes up there that there will be volunteers at the boat landings talking to us about noxious weeds, especially milfoil and things like that. They give you the little stickers. Put on the tailgates, they'll educate you, or put on the trailers, the tongues of your trailers, and they do some education if you haven't talked to them before. I'm curious to know, are measurables being done on those types of programs to see, is it improving? Are they seeing less contamination from lake to lake of noxious weeds, or is it too early in that program to know if it's a successful program?
Oh, that's a good question.
Chris? That is a great question. You know, I don't know for sure if they're seeing if there's less spread, but I know that they are, getting thousands of contacts with people. And basically the way to combat invasive species moving is education and not allowing it to happen. Once things are in, a lot of times it's very, very difficult to get them out of whether it's a stream, a lake, or it's a prairie situation or whatever. So the goal is education and trying to minimize the spread.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. One other ways that the data, volunteer collected data, are being used. Can you think of some other examples?
Yeah, for sure. I know for a fact that the DNR does a lot of master planning for state properties. And again, I know it came up earlier, but eBird is another good example. Again, because it's such a large program, we regularly use eBird data to sort of fill in the gaps, you know, maybe for areas that our professional biologists haven't had a chance to get out and cover, or to get an idea of some of the longer term changes in the bird communities at particular state properties. And again, so that information is used in the planning of how habitats will be managed at a particular state park.
Yeah. We have some more callers online, or some more email questions coming up here, and we'll get to those in a bit. Again, 1-800-642-1234. I would expect that this whole program really extends the DNR resources.
Absolutely. You know, a few years ago, it was estimated that on an annual basis, about 300,000 hours are spent by volunteers out in Wisconsin's woods and prairies and wetlands. 300,000 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, monitoring our natural resources. And that equates to about over $6 million of time and effort. So, yeah, this is a very, very significant expenditure of, you know, and it's just not, we couldn't do this ourselves. As I mentioned before, DNR doesn't have that kind of resources to get out there and have, you know, thousands and thousands of eyes and ears on the ground. And that's really one of the main, one of the powers of citizen-based monitoring.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the efforts. I know there's some things coming up in April, for example, different projects, and one is a frog and toad survey, and maybe you could talk about what's involved with that.
Yeah, the Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey has been going on for a little over 30 years now in the state of Wisconsin, and very successful program. Essentially, volunteers will volunteer to cover a specific route, and that route has a number of stops, and which you do the roadside stops. You'll do them at night, and essentially just listen and count the number of frogs and the different types of frog species and the one toad, American toad, that we have in Wisconsin, and just record those data on numbers and species. And the Frog and Toad Survey's got a great website. It's got a lot of training information. You can see videos and listening to, you know, recordings of the calls before you go out. And again, very popular. I know there are still some routes open for this year. If people want to get online and Google or get over to the Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey.
So if you just type that in, it's probably going to...
It'll pop up. Yep, for sure.
It's interesting. Scott Craven from Wildlife Ecology is going a regular on my show. We always the first Wednesday of the month, and he's on first Wednesday of April, and we'll be talking, zeroing in a bit on frogs. And I think we'll be playing some frog songs. For
Great.
Have a little identification.
Excellent. Well, you know, Larry, this early spring, we've gotten many reports already of things like American toads singing, which are their trilling call, and that usually doesn't happen until June. So
yeah, that's,
things
like
are moving
months
quickly.
Early. It's even months
absolutely.
Earlier.
Yeah.
What do you are? I mean, is it a worrisome thing?
Well, you know, this is 1 year, obviously, but yeah. One of the beauties of a program, citizen-based monitoring program like the Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey, is that you have that long-term data, and you can look at trends, and, you know, this spring may turn out to be just one blip, or, you know, we'll see in the future whether this trend continues.
Pat in Duluth, Minnesota. I want to get back to that, to some of the other programs, but let's go to Pat next. Pat, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that I was invited to participate in a monitoring this year of the wildflower Spring Beauty, which I think is a Claytonia or a Claytonia.
Right.
And so people just need to know where a patch of this very early spring wildflower is, and the purpose is to record which pollinators are going to that little flower.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm sorry, we don't have email at home, but I could email that original link to you to your website tomorrow if anyone were interested in that.
Why don't you do that and then post it to my Facebook page?
Okay.
At the Larry Mueller Show?
Okay. But they have a really good identification guide as part of that project, so people can really learn at the same time.
That's great. Is that, Pat, is that a university program, or who's running that one?
I'm really sorry. I can't remember. In fact, this week I was going to check on it again, but I will send that link to you.
Yeah, please send it to Owen and Chris as well at the DNR.
Definitely.
Okay. Can I get that offline, the emails for that, or can you just tell me now?
Yeah, why don't you just give it right now?
Sure.
Because other people may want to contact you anyway.
Absolutely.
Actually, you can probably get it online at my Facebook page here, but go ahead.
Well, I'll just give it real quick. So my email is owen.boyle, B-O-Y-L-E, at wisconsin.gov. And if you get on the DNR website, you can always search and find it that way as well.
Okay. Well, thanks for all your work.
Thanks a lot for calling. We do have a link to the Citizen-Based Monitoring Network. So if you just go to the website, you can click on it, and there you are. You'll go right to Owen or Chris. We have another one that intrigued me was the Western Great Lakes Owl. And there's a monitoring program starting in April on that?
Correct, yeah. The owl survey is something that's been going on for, I think, 3 or 4 years now in Wisconsin and across the upper Midwest. And I just talked to the coordinator for that survey who is in DNR. That's a DNR-run program. But it sounds like almost all the owl routes are taken up for this spring.
Ah.
So you might need to get in there earlier next year. But I know for a fact that we do have another bird monitoring program, Red-Shouldered Hawk Survey, which does, in fact, need volunteers. And that's a fun one, too, because you go out and Red-Shouldered Hawk is a state-threatened bird. So fairly rare, and you go out and play recordings of the bird call and see if they come into your recording. And
that's cool.
That's a lot of fun. Yeah.
And where do you know offhand some of the areas where you might still need people for the red-shouldered hawk?
I don't know specifically, but again, so the both the owl and the red-shouldered hawk surveys are on Wisconsinbirds.org. website. So if you get on wisconsinbirds.org and click on monitoring, you can get to those two pages, and there are nice maps there that you can see in real time which routes are still available.
Okay. And as long as we're on birds, the Midwest crane count is another one that's probably as well known as any out there.
That's a big one. Very popular this year. It's Saturday, April 14th, so coming up real quick. And again, if you can get onto the Midwest Crane Count website, there's contact information there. I know there are often local organizers who sort of keep track of the various places, the various wetlands that they still need volunteers to help monitor. And it's a fun one. You get out there before the sun comes up and kind of sit and wait for the sun to come up, and you hear the dawn chorus, and the cranes start trumpeting. And, boy, it's a lot of fun.
I'm telling you, just being out in Wisconsin in the spring before the sun comes up, like that half hour or 45 minutes, or the hour before the sun, and the intensity, how it picks up with the calls of the birds and amphibians and everything that's going on. It's just it's a wonderful experience.
Yeah, it makes it worth setting that alarm clock early.
I'm telling you, or the turkeys calling, or what? It's an absolutely wonderful experience. Well, we had some information. Alan Abrams shared that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Detroit office monitors the Great Lakes levels. And so to our earlier caller who asked about Great Lakes levels, Lake Michigan hit its all-time low in 1963 and all-time high in 85. I remember that high for sure. There's about a five-foot range between the two, and currently we're at about a foot above the all-time low. And so that's very interesting for me, too. So about a foot above that all-time low, you can go to the Detroit office of the Corps for up-to-date information on all levels. So if you go online and type in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Detroit office, that is bound to pop up.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
You're going to get that information. It was very interesting. Thanks so much, Al, for sending that along. Gary in Boscobel will turn to you next. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I've been monitoring prairie plants in southwest Wisconsin for the last 25 years and reporting all of those locations to the BER over time. And just last week, I turned in locations of surveys for the state endangered purple milkweed in Crawford County that I've been doing for a couple of years, and there was over 115 locations on there.
Wow.
And I wanted to point out that in this is a kind of a criticism of the BER and Department of Natural Resources, and I think that without criticisms we can't correct our problems and move ahead. And the criticism is that, for instance, with these purple milkweeds, they're all on roadsides. And every roadside in the state is subject to spraying and mowing and complete annihilation and destruction by road crews from township level all the way to state level and contractors. And these endangered species that live on these roadsides have absolutely no protection as far as it comes to protecting them from massive losses in the state. And the Department of Natural Resources really has no recourse to protect these species. And it's just really frustrating to locate dozens of sites of rare species in Grand County and go back 20 years later and they're all gone because of damage to roadsides and uncontrolled road development and just roadside sterilization. And I know last week you had the director of the Bureau of Endangered Resources on there, and I was critical of some of the natural areas' inability to manage these sites and losing species on there. And I was real frustrated, Larry, because the response I got was talking about all the different license plates available for the citizens to purchase rather than addressing some of these serious problems that need to be looked at and talked about. And I'd like to get a good response from your guests on that.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. Owen, it was turned to you.
Oh, boy, I appreciate Gary's comments and his frustrations. You know, what he's talking about is really some kind of policy level stuff that, you know, I don't get involved with. And other than the citizen-based monitoring aspect of what Gary has done and monitoring endangered plants, just comment on that. That's phenomenal. And we really do appreciate that. And we use those data, to help protect those plants. And, you know, we do have recourse and we have active communication with counties and townships, to try and protect plants that are in roadsides.
But it's a hard task.
It is. It's tough.
Because you really don't have jurisdiction. If a county wants to do something, I don't, or a township.
I don't know the details of, you know, now we're talking policy and law, the Endangered Species Act, which, as we mentioned, is 40 years old.
So citizens like Gary have to, I think, have to be, and he was vocal today and very articulate in what he had to say, but I think people who are concerned about that really need to. It's a political thing as much as anything, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right.
One of the things that citizens can do is communicate and work with their local legislators and get to know them personally, work with them, because then you can, once you get to know them, you can share your concerns with them about whatever the issue. And as Owen said, you know, it's a policy-based thing, so it's got to start somewhere. And citizens, you know, without working in your local communities and starting that, planting that seed, nothing may happen unless if you care, you got to take the steps to make it happen. So it is, it's a major long process probably, but it's got to start somewhere. So,
and it's a good point. I mean, you know, citizen-based monitoring, going out and actually counting critters, you know, not everybody's got the interest or the time for that. And so there are other things you can do. And as you mentioned, I think last month on your show, Larry, that, you know, we're getting close to tax time here, and, you can look for the loon on your tax form and hopefully make a contribution, and that money goes to all of our efforts to protect threatened and endangered species in Wisconsin.
Yeah, my wife and I figured out our taxes last weekend, and that's always one of the last things that you do before you're finally done, is you see that loon there, and we put money into that every year, and I hope other people do too. A lot of people do, but we can always use more.
Absolutely.
More help. Well, I tell you what, we're about out of time. I want to thank you both so much. Again, we have people can go to the Citizen-Based Monitoring Network of Wisconsin. You've got a website there, so people can go and...
Yeah, can I give that real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
So if people get over to WIATRI, that stands for the Wisconsin... Aquatic and Terrestrial Resource Inventory. So WATRI.net/CBM for citizen-based monitoring. And one resource I wanted to mention there for folks interested in finding a program to be involved with is we've got a great directory of who's who in citizen-based monitoring in Wisconsin. So if you get to our that website and click on the who's who, you can search by the species you're interested in or the county where you live and hopefully find a program that fits your interests.
Thank you both so much. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks.
Owen Boyle is coordinator of citizen-based monitoring for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Chris Stepanuk is the Water Action Volunteer Coordinator for UW Extension and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And again, you can, if you didn't get that that site address down, you can just go to my website at the Larry Mueller Show at my Facebook page, and you can click on it, and we will send you right there. Well, we've been talking about citizen-based monitoring and the Endangered Species Act. Some plants, I wouldn't mind having endangered, to be perfectly honest. Those are the ones that are toxic and poisonous. Donna Lotzer, they probably have good things about them, too. But Donna Lotzer is here to talk about keeping our pets and our kids safe. Find out all about that next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.